You want some bad news, Michael?
No.
What are you asking me?
You're the guru of the gray matter. I figured if anybody had it, you'd have the answer.
I can't give you any direction.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
You're completely wrong.
I refuse to be wrong on two calls in a row.
Tell me I'm spot on or tell me I'm crazy as I'll get out.
I have no idea.
I have a six-month-old, so we'll be raising him according to Dr. Ray.
Talk about being a winner.
So, you want my question?
You ain't making any sense.
You're absolutely right. I just needed confirmation.
So what are you going to do about it, Dawn?
I'm calling you.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Yeah, in case it doesn't work out for Dawn, she's got somebody to blame. Me. The doctor is in. This is E-Person Monday. Delighted to have you with me. This is where we... Well, you don't. And you shouldn't use we. I noticed that in writing books. Many authors will say, especially a nonfiction book, as we've discussed earlier in these pages. Well, wait a minute. We didn't discuss earlier in these pages. There's kind of a forced literary intimacy. We're together on this. So I took that advice to heart, and I just try to avoid this. As we shall see later. Well, wait a minute. I already know it because I'm writing it, and as you shall see later would be a more accurate way to say it, or maybe as you shall not see later because you won't see it. Anyway, see this kind of stuff that goes through my head. The number here is irrelevant because this is the website, and the website is, if you go to drray.com, there is a contact page, and that is where we get the vast bulk of these e-persons. And I'm going to explain something that somebody explained to me about e-person when I tackle, and that's a manly word, when I tackle. A more sensitive word would be when I address some of your e-persons. So, how do you know you're right as a parent? More and more parents are asking questions phrased like, did I do the right thing? Should I have done that? Is it okay to, in essence, what is the psychologically correct thing to do? First of all, that's very hard to know because the experts don't agree. They are scattered all over the map in terms of parenting approaches. My first book was a book titled, You're a Better Parent Than You Think. Now, one objection to that title was, a lot of people are not better parents than they think. They're worse than they think. Your title should be, Your Parenting Stinks. And I said, who is going to buy a parenting book? It is not people who are neglectful in their parenting. It is not people who are stubbornly unwilling to learn anything from anybody about their parenting. It is people who want to be better parents. That's who's going to buy a book like that. And I found that a lot of the very appearing good parents that I talked to were worried about being right as parents. How do I know I'm doing the right thing? And so many of their questions toward me were not, I did this. It was, I did this. Was that okay? You're right. And here's the answer to that question. How do you know you're right as a parent? You're right. Most of the time. Because you're the parent. No TV during the week? Your decision. You're the parent. 99% of parents don't do that. So what? Smartphone, cell phone, not until age 16? Hoo-hoo! Boy, you are in just a sliver of a minority. Are you wrong? You're right, because you're the parent. Those are a parent's decisions based upon her values, her morals, what she wants to teach, the trustworthiness of her own child. You're right, because that is your judgment as a parent. But Dr. Ray, sometimes my judgment is terrible and it's wrong and it's bad. You can see guidance and you can say, all right, that makes sense to me. I'll consider that, which is the way all my books are written, by the way. Here's something to ponder and put into your hopper for raising children. But the idea that you are correct because some expert says so, or even a bunch of experts say so, because there's a reality right now that's happening very rapidly in our culture, which is the experts generally don't think like religious parents. They don't. You want one sign of that? When's the last time you heard a secular expert talk about teaching your child humility, huh? Humility is the very center of Christian virtues. They talk about self-image, self-esteem. So they don't really think like religious parents. Most don't. So, given all this, what you do is you tie yourself up in knots. You second guess. Was that right? Should I have done that? How do you say that so it becomes a matter of there are proper formulas to follow as a parent? For virtually all of human history, with the exception of maybe the last couple of generations, parents recognized that they had to raise their children as they saw best. But Dr. Ray, a lot of stuff that's been done has been awful and terrible, and we should never, ever do it. And I agree with that. But I think, again, among the better parents who are trying to be good parents, by and large, their decisions are based upon sound judgment. And if they're not, it's because they've been pulled off track by consensus parenting. You can't consensus parent if you are a faithfully religious parent. It's not possible. By the numbers alone. If your child doesn't have a TV in her room and she's over 10, you're in a dwindling minority. If your child doesn't have a smartphone at 14, you are even in a smaller minority. If you have a reading hour in your house, when's the last time you heard of that? You say blessings out in restaurants, and you make the sign of the cross, big so people can see it, not a real tiny one on your chest. When's the last time you saw somebody out in a restaurant making the sign of the cross, of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people you see go through there? If you go to a fast food place, and you order the kids' meal, but you don't want the toy because you think it's privilege enough that you're buying them a meal out, and you refuse the toy. How many people do you think do that? Are you wrong? Or is this your decision as a parent? If you think they're getting too many gifts at Christmas, it's just obscene how many gifts they're getting, and you've decided we're going to give a lot of these away shortly after Christmas. Are you wrong? It's your decision. You're the parent. What's your curfew? Your decision. What's your allowance? Your decision. What age are they going to drive? Your decision. All of this, so much of what you're doing to raise that child as you see best is your right because you're the parent. I know. There may be some thinking, Dr. A, some people are going to take that as license just to be a dictator and do whatever they want and just decide, I don't care what the kid thinks and I'm not going to be flexible and I'm not talking anything like that. I'm talking about making good decisions that you believe are best for your family, your morals, and your particular child, without having to worry that somehow, some way, you are running afoul of proper psychological enlightenment. We've turned parenting into a process. Dot all your psychological I's, cross all your psychological T's, and it will guarantee the child that you want to raise. And I will tell you, some of the most obnoxious young people I have seen have been raised by psychological theories that are absolutely ineffective. How do you know you're right as a parent? Best answer? You're the parent. I'm Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Food for the journey, Sister Ann Shield.
You know, we would avoid a lot of difficult arguments, just spouting off at the mouth, as we sometimes say. Just ask the Lord, give me the words to say. Maybe I'm rightfully angry, but if I just shout and yell and scream, what good is that going to be? Brothers and sisters, God can give us much more control over our anger, over our fear, over our language. And so whenever you're in a tight spot, just stop for a moment and say, Lord, what would you have me do here? God is good. I don't mean he's going to say words that will come down from heaven, but if you pause just for a moment, you'll get hold of yourself, and you may well get a thought that you didn't have before. And sometimes it's just quiet, but it's enough to bring down the steam. And then you think what is really right to say here. You might be justifiably angry. How do we respect the other person while we're correcting them? Please, brothers and sisters, let us open our hearts to God in those moments.
Sister Ann Shields gives you food for the journey. Weekday mornings at 6:45 and again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
One of the rules that I have on The Doctor Is In is if you disagree with me, you jump the line. You jump the turnstile and you're placed right to the front. That rule applies also to E-Person Monday. This just came in relatively recently. I was talking in an opening monologue where I got in trouble with my 6th grade teacher, Mrs. Elgis, because we were to write a short story. And this kid was going to bite into an apple, and there was a little tiny worm in there. And the worm tried to stop the kid. And the worm said, please, I have a wife and 6 kids. And Mrs. Elgis, this almost killed my literary career. I just want to say that. Fortunately, I recovered. Came back, and she had crossed out kids, and she put children. She thought kids was just a little too slangish. Well, this got a call from a lovely lady, and she said, thanks for all you do, Dr. Ray. I listen at work, but I can't call you. And she was very kind about that. But she said here, I've called kids children for years because I feel it's a more respectful term. And it is. It certainly is more formal. But we use slang in a whole bunch of ways that aren't necessarily any less respectful. But I would say this. If this dear lady wishes to call kids children, that's cool. Now, there's a second part of this. I talked also about, in grad school, where there was a very, very no-nonsense back-to-basics discipline course that said you do not put your classroom rules on the board as a teacher in the negative. You always put it in the positive. And I made fun of that. I had a lot of fun with that. And she said this: I was trained in a parenting course called Positive Discipline. Yes, I'm very familiar with it. It was popular there for a while. It taught us to tell the children what to do, what was expected of them, rather than what not to do. Okay, I think that's great. Here's my question. What happens when they don't do what they are to do? In other words, if you say, okay, play friendly, all right, that's telling them what to do. If you say, share the trucks in the sand station, that's telling them what to do. If you say, no throwing toys, all right, so tell them what to do is to play with toys, and if these are little preschoolers, you got to keep the language basic, play with toys friendly. Okay, that's fair enough. But you're still left with, what do you do when they don't? See, I always wondered about that positive discipline stuff. The implication is, as long as you phrase it in the positive, the children will be much more cooperative. And again, my experience with these kinds of theories is that they work for some kids. But it's part of the old hope for the best, plan for the worst. Now you're hoping the kids absorb it. Now, our writer here said that, in fact, she found this to be an effective, clear way to tell toddlers what's expected of them. Now, remember, toddlers, now these are 1 to 2 to maybe 3-year-olds. So these are little kids. These are little kids. What I've found is that as the kids get older, you better be more prepared to respond if they don't do what you've asked them to do in the positive. Keep hands and feet to self. Okay, what are you going to do if they don't? All right. The other thing is this. The theory is that this is more effective, and our writer says that. She says it could be for children to try to interpret all the things they can't do versus telling them what's allowed. Now, see, I think these theories so much play with ideas. Yeah, it's nice to tell them what they can't do. But there's not a whole lot that they're not allowed to do. You're not going around with 27 rules. You're basically saying don't hit people. Don't throw stuff. Don't scream in their face. Okay. Now that's the way the world operates. The world does that. It does. So the argument could be made that the best teaching of a young child in the context of love and acceptance is the way the world would teach in the context of not love and acceptance. In other words, the world operates out of don'ts. It truly does. Whether you like it or not, it does. Don't mishear me. No, hear me correctly. So because of this, a parallel is don'ts for little kids, but the difference is it's done in the context of love and acceptance. All right? So when you tell a kid don't kick somebody, rather than saying, keep feet to self. Again, I see it as a little bit of playing with words, because effectively, doesn't make any difference. And interestingly enough, now I know our writer said it did make a difference. I found it to be very effective. Well, is it because you phrased it in terms of what you're allowed to do? Or is it because they were 1 and 2-year-olds? All right, so she makes really good points, and I'm very familiar with that stuff. It was very, very much what we had to try to practice with the older kids, especially the behavior problem kids. And I'll tell you what, it blew up in our faces, because you had to be prepared when your positives didn't work. All right, let's see what else we got here. Now, this one's a little... I got 4 minutes. I got time here. I saw your show on June 4th. with Father Mitch. I had Father Mitch co-host a Living Right with Dr. A show with me, taped it a while back, and it's now being aired. And she said, yes, of course, animals, such as dogs and cats, do not have an immortal soul. Therefore, the idea of one's family dog or cat rising... Now, here's where I'm getting a little confused. I guess the best answer is it's in the power of God himself. Now, I think what she's saying is, because they don't have an immortal soul, the implication was, therefore, they're not in heaven. But she's saying God can do whatever he wants to do. I'm not disagreeing that the soul of Fido the dog or Fluffy the cat will not rise in Christ, but that Jesus has authority from God his Father over all that is of nature. Matthew 3:9. God is able from these stones to raise up children for Abraham. Animals and birds, and rolling back inanimate huge stones, blocking him from exiting a tomb, or Jesus walking on water by the power of the Holy Spirit, of course. So for any lovers of God's creatures, fear not. With God, all things are possible. Would that be the best answer to sell such folks, Dr. E? Well, I guess one of my best answers is, and I found that I use this answer a lot more about a lot of things, I just don't know. But I think what she is saying is, her speculation, this is all speculation, is that animals could be in heaven even though they don't have immortal, rational souls like we do. They have the sensate, feeling souls. But God can make that possible if he so wishes. I think that's the point she is making. And can't disagree with that. All right, do I have time for another one? 223. Let me see where I'm at here. Let's see this one is. Oh boy, this is a tough one here. I'm gonna start it. What can I do about my spouse mistreating me during arguments? I guess the first thing I would want to know is how much do you fight back? But wait a minute, I have to defend myself. You do up to a point, but if you're finding that in arguing back, that only escalates the situation. You could say things like, why are you mistreating me? Why are you calling me names? Why are you yelling? Now, that'll probably make her even madder, but at least you're not escalating it with your own hostility and harsh words. When someone says to me, oh, our arguments just get out of control. I say, well, it takes two. It takes two to get them out of control, most of the time. Yeah, you can get somebody on a rant or a tirade. That can happen. But these recurrent, escalating, back-and-forth type arguments take two people. And if one pulls out of it somehow, some way, either with just a blank look or silence or an observation about the process, why are you so mad about that? Or tell me exactly what I did that you said I'm thoughtless. What is that? I want to know. In other words, you're breaking from, you say this, I'll say that. You argue this, I'll argue that. You say I do this, I'll say you do that. That's what escalates these things. And it's very, very hard to shut your mouth. It's very, very hard to pull out of that cycle because you want to defend yourself. In your mind, you're just getting falsely accused. In your mind, you're being mistreated. And I think that's what is happening here with that. He says, Dan, he says, we argue it's like World War III. We fight to the death because you have angered me. Well, see, that what you're saying is, yeah, you fight to the death back because you got mad at what she was saying. But if you could control your anger over what she's saying, you won't escalate quite as much. Thank you for joining me and Andrew Krucek, my producer man and board operator here on The Doctor Is In on this E-Person Monday. My son, Peter, is managing my Instagram account, and I told Petey, mostly, Pete, I just want stuff on there that I think might be helpful to someone or that some people could look at and say, I never thought of it that way, or that's something they could use. That's what it's all about. I don't want to get into this. But interestingly enough, I just cut my sentence off. I interrupted myself. My wife says I do that. She says, you start a sentence and then you stop in the middle. And I said, I do not because I... And then I just looked at her. Okay, so I told a joke. And it was a good joke. It was a joke about Jesus and Moses, an elderly-looking gentleman. It had a very, very not so subtle religious tinge to it. It made a statement about Jesus as God and as the Son. That that Instagram is now at 1.7 million. What? I mean, whatever else I've offered as thoughts and advice, they thought okay. Not even close to 1.7 million. The other thing I noticed, I was trying to figure out what was it that makes these particular, I guess they're called reels, they're 45-second things, I guess that's what you put on Instagram, short stuff. What makes certain ones explode and others just do okay? And I've noticed a pattern. The ones who have, for the most part, done the best are the ones who, in an indirect way, comment upon someone else's conduct and you having to deal with that, as opposed to your own conduct and how you can self-improve. Interesting theme. I'll see if it keeps up, because we've recorded a few today, and we'll see. We'll see if the ones that talk about it have the same viral response. Your intro today, Dr. Ray, spoke to e-person versus e-mail. And you mentioned that mail, M-A-I-L, and male, M-A-L-E, are homonyms. I did say that. And by the way, I've been corrected on that, and I've told Christina here I've been corrected. She says, since you are such a well-spoken person, those would argue, I have to mention that a homonym is two words that are the same pronunciation and the same spelling, but different meanings. Now, I'm trying to think of a homonym. I'm sure they're there, but offhand, I'm not thinking of one. Homophones or homophones are two words that are the same pronunciation, like male and male, with different spellings. So really, male and male are homophones, homophones. I know you know your root words, so it will be easy for you to remember homonym, same name, right? Homo meaning same, and nym, name, versus homophone. Homo, same, phone, sound. Christina. And I wrote her back. I said, Christina, you're absolutely right. And I've been corrected by this before. But in my defense, I forgot. Thank you, Christina. All right, see what we got here. Oh, yeah, I should have noticed this. Okay, this will probably take me through the break because this is a disagreement with me. And as I said, you disagree, you're up first. And I just noticed this was further down in the stack, so I didn't pick up on it. I found your opening monologue, and this was a couple weeks back, though mostly true, a bit short-sighted. I do laugh at today's parents who claim their kids are under more stress than any other generation due to social media. Those stresses pale compared to my father being drafted immediately after high school graduation to go fight a world war. And yes, medical and agricultural advances, too, have come a long way. Here's the big but. Your monologue falls short by failing to recognize the dangers of the modern world. First, militarily, with our capacity to destroy the planet by a single madman push of the button. Well, it's not quite that simple. That would take certain steps. And we hope to our Lord there are protections in place. Along with information systems now in place to ensure that each of us can be canceled when we don't step in line with the woke authority. Add to this the amount of godlessness so pervasive in a society that can no longer truly define a man and woman and thinks nothing of slaughtering our most vulnerable on a massive scale. It is why people's concerns are more justified than you appear to give credit for. Though daily dangers were much higher in generations past, the bottom as a whole can much easier drop out today. Let me respond to that. Okay, I don't argue with the general premises. Most people live in a day-to-day close by concerns. In the past, yes, you struggled much harder just to survive on a day-to-day basis. The further back you go, the tougher it was. 50% of children died before age 5. That's big. Food. In our Lord's day, they estimated that 1/3 to 2/3 of Palestine was hungry on a daily basis. Starvation has been massive throughout human history. So, yeah, on a day-to-day stress level, close by in the way that I conduct my life, it was horrific compared to today for much of us here in the Western world. What Thomas is referring to is the mental aspect, the concerns, the worries, the possibilities, and not to trivialize them because they are there. But the argument could be made is that mental concern greater than the struggle to survive day to day? Now, again, that's a debatable point. For some people, it may be. But I still submit overall, the closer in your actual survival becomes to you, the greater the stress. Now, one might say, yeah, okay, but the pace of our culture, the intrusions of these ideas in our culture, a culture who has abandoned God, those are major stressors, and they are, and they truly are. But in a sense, here's probably my biggest argument, in a sense, a good, loving family can go a long way to minify those mental stressors. That wasn't possible in much of human history because everybody was surviving. Do it. Thank you for joining me. I just came from last night's support group that I have for nagging parents. Yeah, it's called On and On Anon. I'm Dr. Ape. Program Doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Co-production of the EWGN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications. My communicator in chief there in Ann Arbor is Andrew Krucek, father of John and Audra Rose. Well, Audra Rose is the older child. Hi, Dr. Ray. Our family consists. Now, this first line is indicative of what's happening here. Our family consists of 5 lovable, enjoyable, easy to parent biological children. 5 in-laws, okay, so all the kids are married, 12 grandchildren, so they're already starting to give birth to a lot of kids, which may reflect that they are still, at least most of them, still in the family-raised faith, and 1 17-year-old adopted daughter that has been with us since she was 18 months. Not uncommonly do I work with parents who have had biological children. And it sounds like, of course, this daughter here is the youngest of all the kids, maybe several years younger. Because the parents have raised their kids. Kids are doing pretty good. Parents are thinking, hey, that was nice. That was a wonderful experience. Let's open our home to adopt a child. And they're generally of the mindset that this will be the same parenting journey as it was with the bio kids. That's not always so. There's a lot of reasons for that. Now, mom here said that, I'll just give you the details. She came to us as a foster child whose father had his rights terminated and mother decided she didn't want her anymore. The adoption was final when she was 3. And we did have her baptized. Okay. You got to assume, they might know more about this, but you can assume that that first 18 months was not the best. And perhaps the womb environment wasn't either. If there were drugs, there were alcohol, this little one did not get the kind of neurochemical structure that would make for being socialized. Not just easily, but bouncing along. Maybe bad judgments or deceptiveness or resistance or sneakiness or things that the parents would be totally buffaloed by thinking, we're not raising her this way. Why is she doing this stuff? And furthermore, they would say, the other kids didn't do this. True. But this one did not have the jump start that your other children did. I homeschooled our other 5 children, but was teaching in a Catholic school when our daughter was taught and where we are permissioner. She came to the school where I taught. She'll be starting her senior year in the fall. She can be very sweet to everyone except us. Well, that's not all that unusual with kids across the board, but it probably has something to do with most other people's relationships are not that deep with her. And most other people don't require things of her. And most other people don't stifle her desires, whatever those are, for materialism, for technological freedom, whatever that is. Most other people don't breed in her the resentment that she feels because she's not getting what she thinks she should. That's very common, by the way. She's been in adoption therapy twice, but now doesn't want to go anymore. See, that line right there indicates to me that some might speculate, maybe even mom here, that this behavior is related to the adoption issues. Why didn't my bio parents keep me? Who am I really? Do I have an attachment problem here? Those are common psychological speculations, but my experience is, and I think the research supports this, that more often than not, there is neurological thinning, neurological deficits. Not obvious. Kid may get good grades and all of that. But in the overall executive functioning of the brain, that part of us that helps us make good judgments, that helps us anticipate consequences, that helps us in self-control, is not all well wired. Her grades have always been a struggle, mostly because of missing assignments. Yeah, there you go. You got that self-control, self-discipline issue. She lies to us. Deception, has stolen money from us, and her room is a war zone. Yeah, I've noticed that sometimes with adopted kids who have had early histories that were turbulent. They are very disheveled in their possessions. Very, very. And when they move out as young adults, the parents are shocked when they visit their apartment or where they live to find that it is just filthy. It's not just scattered and cluttered. It's just downright filthy. She has ADD and executive function disorder. See, there's the executive function disorder, which means, in other words, the parts of the brain that are involved with more sophisticated thinking aren't working all that well. That's just a fancy way of saying that. Regardless of what strategies we take or suggest, there are no changes. See, I would argue with you on that, Mom. You're sustaining her at least enough that without your approaches and your limits and your structure and your lessons, I think all hell would break loose. So in that sense, don't underestimate the stability that you are giving her, even if she isn't taking advantage of it. She doesn't have a smartphone or a tablet because I don't trust her on the internet. That's fair enough. I understand that. Last fall, I found out she was sexting someone in another state, so she hasn't had her Chromebook since. Recently, she told me she cut herself last year. Yeah, this is just a kid who, in a lot of respects, probably wasn't given the kind of neurological maturity that she needed. Certainly, probably not like the other five bio kids had. And is resentful because she looks around her in this culture and says, "Whoa, why did I get stuck with these people? These religious kooks." Now, here's the good news. She has a job she loves. She works with dogs. She's researching jobs for her future, as I'm anticipating. She's not college bound. That's probably true. Several of my kids are not. Socially, she doesn't have too many real friends, although she talks about friends at school, but she's never invited anywhere, nor does she do any inviting. Yeah, you would expect there'd be social issues. Again, because of the judgment and reading social cues and the ability to relate easily to someone is not there. It's a struggle for her. The mother says this, she's always been quirky in social settings. She loves youth group. Never wants to miss it. She's enjoyed week-long camps at Damascus. That's a small town here in Ohio. And Steubenville. Our family is very loving. Yeah, no doubt about that one. And way back when we adopted her, I thought she would be a beautiful addition to our family. Absolutely. Many parents who have this stable, loving family think, okay, let's open our home up to an adopted child, one a little bit older even, and they get rocked when the child comes with a panoply of struggles. I've tried so many things, Dr. Ray. I've read so many books, and quite frankly, I'm tired. Is there anything I'm missing? Not really. I mean, I can't say that. But I would suspect not. And I base that upon the fact that your situation is one I've seen so many times. I've had them come into my office where they had two bio kids first, they adopted, and the adoption journey was much more bouncy. Yes. But here's what I would say to you. One, you exposed her to the faith. It's there. Even if she rejects it, it is there. Two, you gave her love and stability. And as she, quote, gets out on her own and she is free at last from you, she may take a turn for the worse for a while. Too much freedom is intoxicating. But in the end, she may find this is not a good way to live, and she may realize that the people who truly love her and she can truly count on are Mom and Dad. Three, you will at some point say, we raised her as best we could. She is now on her own. She's God's child. I'll continue to pray for her. And that's where you're at. You don't torture yourself thinking, why did this not work out? What did I miss? I thought I was so good at parenting. God's gift. Five great kids. I can do this. You underestimated what can sometimes happen when there is that early neglect, early drug or alcohol exposure, and bouncing around. This child during the most formative years did not have what your children had to form that brain. And because of that, her approach to life is much more scattered, much more erratic. Do not blame yourself. And recognize that you're coming to the end of your parenting journey, and you have done what God has asked you to do. You opened your home. You welcomed a little one in Jesus' name, as he said, who does that welcomes me. You did that. And now, she's soon to be on her own, where you'll see how this will unfold, but you will be there to pray for her and love her. I'm Dr. Ray.
We'll return after these messages.
This week on Christ is the Answer, Father John talks about surrender and greed. After hosting a very successful Alpha series at his parish at the time, many of the attendees were excited and hungry to learn even more about God. Out of that longing for the Lord, the Next Necessary Step series was formed. Don't miss out this week as Father John teaches on what it means to fully surrender to God, as well as showing the weight that greed puts on the human heart. Tune in for Christ is the Answer Monday through Fridays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
Fire on the Earth, Peter Herbeck.
Jesus said, you're the light of the world. And one of the things that he meant by that was the Christian people understand the larger story that's unfolding in history. So as St. Paul said, as the saints echoed very clearly, we're now living through just a short moment, a slight momentary affliction, he calls it, in this life, which is going to make way and lead us to an eternal glory beyond all compare. The secret to the fruitfulness and the strength of the apostles was that they lived with a clear vision of the future, an eternal perspective, fixed on the destiny of where their life was headed. And they lived with the realization that, wow, yeah, life is very short here. Everything is temporary. Nothing here in this world is ultimately going to last except the ultimate destinies, the eternal destinies of every human being that exists on the earth. And they knew that whether good things were coming their way or bad things from the world's perspective were coming away, nothing could steal from them, nothing could take away the gold that was in their heart, the treasure that they bore. You're a temple of the Holy Spirit.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth, weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Okie dokie. No time to take on a longer e-person, so here's a quick question. My son has had his driver's license for 1 year. He says he's tired of riding the bus to school or hitching rides with friends. You know, this is an older question than I got a while back because long since 17-year-olds, I'm going to assume he's 17, probably a junior, senior, don't ride the bus. Flat out. That's just not cool. They've decided that. My husband and I both work, so we need our cars. Is 17 too young to own a car? Now, see, this again, this is one of those questions that is reflective of what I said in the opening monologue, which is there a right way to do this? Now, the way to do this, Mom, is, of course, your decision. Is he trustworthy? Is he cooperative? Is he pleasant? Is he mature? Those are all factors. If you say, no, I don't think he can own a car because he doesn't have the money, and we'd end up doing everything. We'd have to pay the insurance for a 17-year-old who is driving and owning, which the insurance would be approximately $4,000 a month. But it says here, he says, he is tired of hitching rides with friends. Now, I can understand that, but that may be code for saying, I want my own car. He can be tired. You can say, well, all right, I know you don't like it, but at this point, a car's not possible. You're not making anywhere near enough money. We can't afford the insurance. You're right now listed as one of our drivers. Of course, you can put the car in your own name and have him listed as one of the drivers. But still, given all that, the decision is not, is he too young to own a car? The decision is based upon, what do you think is the best move at this point in his life and in your family's life? You know whether he's trustworthy or reckless. You know what his school performance is like. If he's muddling along with grades below sea level and he's capable of much more, why would you give him a car? If he says, "Well, I'm just tired of not having my own way. You know, it'd be so much more convenient if I could just leave when I wanted. I could leave later, and then I could come home when I wanted, and all of that." And of course, I understand that's what he wants. Your answer is that the best? Your decision. Your mom. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on this E-Person Monday. Very much appreciate your E-Persons that come in, because I get a chance to talk with them and read between the lines and some of the many things you're asking and saying. Thank you for joining me. Walk with God. Fall down. Get
for
up.
Information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.